Hello, my name is Dave Emery, and this is Side 1 of For the Record program number 675, interview with Lucy Commissar, No Such Thing as a Free Lunch. This program has been recorded on May 31st of the year 2009, and once again it is my pleasure and privilege to bring back to our airwaves investigative reporter Lucy Commissar. Lucy, welcome back to the program.
Thanks very much.
Over the several years now, we've done a number of programs, and we've been accessing information that you've been uncovering concerning offshore, and also a number of different shenanigans which perhaps might be subsumed under the title The Emperor's New Finances. And lo and behold, the emperor has indeed turned out to be naked, and a lot of people are suffering as a result. You penned an article about current Treasury Secretary Mr. Geithner and some things that he failed to do while with the Federal Reserve Bank of New York. I wonder if you would stretch out and detail that for us.
It has to do with the massive naked short selling of U.S. Treasury bonds. This is the way that works. An individual or a fund is allowed to sell bonds without owning them. This is called short selling. The seller, whose broker has generally borrowed bonds from another broker, is supposed to then buy them on the market and return them to the lender. Naked short selling occurs when the seller does not borrow the bonds for delivery at settlement, which is usually a day after the purchase, and this is called a failure to deliver. Meanwhile, the buyer thinks that he or she has the bonds, but they just have an IOU. The result is a distortion of the market. The sellers sell bonds they never own or borrow, so there are more securities sold than issued by the government. Those phantom bonds don't represent money paid to the U.S. Treasury, and they're not real securities for the buyers. The broker-dealers who handle the bond trades, they like the system because they profit from these fails by using the client's money for their own purposes. A lot of this has been researched by Suzanne Trimbeth, an economist who used to work for the Depository Trust Company, subsidiary of the Depository Trust and Clearing Corporation, which is the American clearinghouse for stocks and bonds. She told me that in the fall of last year, about $2 trillion in Treasury bonds were sold but undelivered for 6 weeks, more than 20% of the daily trading volume. That was a big spike from previous months. She said there was an excess demand for the Treasuries. And rather than allow this to push the price up, the Federal Reserve Bank of New York and the Depository Trust Clearing Corporation just allowed the failures to deliver to continue and to depress the price. And she said that Tim Geithner ignored the warnings of economists at the New York Fed. As far back in 2002 and then in 2005, they looked at the failures to deliver of treasuries and they recommended fines for the brokers responsible. There was a white paper a year later in 2006. It called for strict enforcement of delivery and penalties for violations, a New York Fed white paper. But the Bond Market Association opposed the reforms and Geithner gave in to them, didn't act. So, therefore, the U.S. is getting less money than it would have gotten, and the money is used to pay down the national debt. And, in fact, it's also been used by the Fed now to help out the very brokerages which are making sure that the Fed, that there's not the money in the Treasury to do what needs to be done. This is a serious problem. It's similar to the naked short selling of securities. But here it's actually the bond which is owned by the government, which is sold by the government, that Geithner is letting be short sold through the naked short selling process. So this problem, Dr. Trimbeth thinks that the loss of funds is about $7 billion a year that is involved in this naked short selling of bonds. She said that the regulators and the Central Clearing Corporation should enforce delivery of the treasuries at T+1. That's one day after the trade. There would be an immediate surge in the price of U.S. Treasury securities, then there would be a lower interest rate that the U.S. government had to pay because there was, it would be such a hot market for it. But that is not happening, and we can lay that at the foot of Tim Geithner.
In other words, basically, there's no there there. People have been buying, basically short, buying and then short selling Treasury bills, actual promissory notes, in effect, from the United States government, and they're not getting, the T-bills are not actually being delivered.
That's right. It's all done electronically, and you supposedly, you have your records at your broker, and then the broker says, well, you have this, but you don't really have that. What you really have is the IOU of your broker. And if you've paid your broker, the broker's using your money.
And so basically, the government, the U.S. government, i.e. us, the taxpayers, and the individual investors who paid the broker are being ripped off. Am I understanding that correctly, Lucy? Because I find a lot of these machinations to be really difficult to grasp. That means they're being ripped off. They were being stolen from.
That's right. And the government, individuals are being ripped off, and the government itself is being ripped off. Because if there are more people than bonds available, the price of the bonds would go up. Or the government could issue the bonds and people could buy the bonds. But what they're doing is people are buying phantom bonds, so the government is not benefiting from this.
And one of the course, as we speak here on May 31st of 2009, one of the international topics of discussion is the weakness of the dollar, and the Chinese, among others, are taking stock of the amount of wealth that they have invested in this country's T-bills, and basically that is something that is absolutely in the focal point, in the crosshairs of this type of investigation, and which is the value of those T-bills is subverted by these kinds of machinations. Am I understanding? Again, I'm not trying to be cute here, but I find some of this stuff very difficult to comprehend, perhaps because it's so bold what they're doing or what they have been doing.
No, absolutely, and you've got it. You've got it down pat. They are selling. They are inflating the market so that there are more bonds than really exist. So when somebody wants to buy a bond, that person may be buying a bond that doesn't exist. Somebody is naked short selling the bond. The seller has not borrowed the actual bond. So when the seller sells it to the buyer, there's a real bond that's being transferred. The seller just says, I'm selling you a bond. It doesn't exist. But all of the brokers are in cahoots on this because the broker of the buyer doesn't say, well, send me the bond. Send me the real bond. Send me real evidence. This is a real bond. They all do it. So they all play the game. They're all in it together. There's maybe a dozen or so major brokerages that are all doing this. And that's why people are stuck with bonds that are not real, and why the government is not getting the money it should get from people that would like to lend it money by buying its bonds.
And basically, as you mentioned, that is depressing the price of the bonds, and that basically is increasing the national debt and undermining the country's finances in a very direct fashion.
That is true. That's exactly true.
Two things, Lucy, I'm going to ask, I guess, in a sense that you editorialize to a certain extent. Would you say that having Timothy Geithner in the position that he is in as Treasury Secretary is, to a certain extent, a case of appointing a fox to guard the hen house?
Well, certainly in this case, it sure seems to be. I think he represents the bankers and brokerage firms much more than he does the U.S. Population.
I would refer listeners to For the Record Program 670, update on the Meltdown Part 3, top banana republic. There was a wonderful article, Lucy, by Mr. Simon. I think his name was John Simon, and he was a former chief economist for the International Monetary Fund, and he was talking about what is taking place in the United States today and comparing the situation of the United States, which I referred to in this case as top banana republic, as basically being in the same position that so many IMF client states have been in, except that we are so large and so powerful that the dictates which would almost certainly be handed down to the IMF if the U.S. were forced to go to the International Monetary Fund with hat in hand, so to speak, have not been applied. And So that's the context in which we should be viewing some of this. Lucy, again, I'm going to ask for perhaps a bit of an editorialization. Maybe this is too strong verbiage for your taste under the circumstances. Feel free to disagree. I would describe some of these machinations as basically treasonous in light of what they're actually doing to the country.
Well, a lot of people do bad things to the country, and treason has a very specific definition. So, one could call the whole Republican Party treasonous. I think that's going a bit too far. So I'd rather not use that word, which really has a very specific definition. It's certainly harmful to the country, and the people that are doing it know very well that it is harmful to the country.
Lucy, too, I'd like you to review the terms short selling and naked short selling for us. We did talk about this in our last conversation for the record 650, but I'm sure many members of the audience are not all that conversant with these terms. Short selling and naked short selling. And what is the difference, and how does the SEC and the Obama administration view these practices?
Short selling is when a seller sells a stock or a bond that he or she does not own, but the seller borrows it from the seller's broker from another broker, sometimes directly, sometimes through the depository trust and clearing corporation. So there really is a stock or a bond that is transferred to the buyer. Naked short selling is when they never borrow the stock or the bond, and the broker sends a message to the other broker, yes, we have sold you this, and the other broker records, yes, you have sold us this, and they put this in the accounts of each side, but there never was anything really moved. So it's a phantom. It doesn't exist. And the brokers often know this, because when it comes time to vote shares, this of course is not with bonds, but it happens with stocks. There's voting usually every spring, and the company sends out the proxies get sent out so the owners of the shares can vote. And very often, the broker will be told, "You are allowed these many votes," but the broker's clients add up to many more votes. So what the brokers do is they send the material out to their clients. The clients send it back to the broker. The broker just throws some of them out because the broker's only allowed to send back so many votes. The broker decides how many votes can be counted. There have been cases where votes have been attempted, where millions of votes have been cast, more votes cast than there were actually votes existing than shares existing. And there have been studies done of this, that in any particular voting period, if you take a couple of hundred companies, every one will have more shares cast than really exist. It's a very big problem. Sometimes a vote is of great importance, so what do you do when there are fake votes? That's a big problem. It hasn't been addressed by our SEC, which we know basically is the representative of the brokerages and not of the stockholders. And it hasn't yet been addressed by the Obama administration. And we have somebody like Geithner, who I think is very comfortable with the brokerage firms who have been making a lot of money off this system. I don't see any change coming from a Geithner. And I'm not sure there's any change coming from the SEC, because Mary Shapiro comes from FINRA, which is the self-governing, the organization of the brokers. Well, again, it's the fox guarding the hen house. I don't see any change coming from either of those individuals.
Didn't Christopher Cox, the former SEC head, actually freeze, at least temporarily, put a ban on short selling of certain companies' securities?
Well, that was because, it was believed to have helped cause the demise of Lehman Brothers, Bear Stearns. I think it really did. There are statistics that show that more shares were sold short for those companies than possibly could have existed. So that was the reason. It was done only because there was a major crisis, and companies who were being threatened by naked short selling did some lobbying and protesting on their own to get this. And so he really had no choice. It's been an issue that has been going around for a number of years, and the SEC has failed to do anything. At a certain point, the crisis was so severe, he had no choice.
Do you know if that has been perpetuated into the Obama administration, or was that sort of a temporary measure that was taken?
Well, they do now. They do have a regulation called Regulation SHO, standing for short selling, but there isn't any kind of enforcement on the naked short selling part. They are considering what to do now, and there have been some proposals, but there needs to be a proposal with real enforcement, and that doesn't exist.
The title of the program, Lucy, is No Such Thing as a Free Lunch. Of course, the phrase, or the old adage that there's no such thing as a free lunch, is one that is frequently bruited about by members of the business community to indicate basically nobody gets a free handout, nobody gets a free lunch, sooner or later you got to pay the piper, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And yet it's pretty apparent from the things that you've been talking about, not just in connection with short selling and naked short selling, but your discussions of offshore, that for an awful lot of the wealthiest, most powerful people within this country's and other countries' business communities, there, at least for the time being, has been a free lunch.
Mm-hmm.
And perhaps extend the metaphor, what happened, there's a lot of discussion now about toxic assets. I guess one could say that perhaps the free lunch turned out to have administered a case of food poisoning. This, Lucy, is obviously kind of a clumsy metaphorical way of transitioning to the next focal point of discussion. Some of the things that we talk about in connection with offshore, some of the many things you've written about, might appear to people to be something that's far away and not something that impacts directly on them, although certainly the financial collapse of last fall has impacted on an awful lot of people very directly, as it has generated shockwaves that have proceeded throughout the global economic community. In your article called Cafeteria Kickbacks, you literally brought the issue of offshoring home to people. People out there might want to consider just how offshoring affects school lunch programs, and you delineated that in a rather compelling fashion in our article about a company that most of us, certainly I had never heard of, and I'd venture that that's probably the case for the vast majority of listeners. Tell us about Sodexo. Who are they, or what is it? What does it do? Where did it come from? How is it involved in offshore machinations, and how does that impact people with children who get cafeteria lunches at school?
Sodexo, first of all, there's some indication that some of the money it skims goes offshore, but that's not the key part of the story, I think. This is just ordinary kickbacks. It's fraud on the taxpayers often, or on individuals. It's pay to play, it's kickbacks. Sodexo is one of the three major companies that run most cafeterias. The others are called Compass and Aramark. If you go to a cafeteria in a hospital, in a business, in a mess hall, perhaps for the army, in a school, it is very likely that this cafeteria is outsourced to Sodexo or one of its two competitors. These are huge companies. Sodexo operates in 80 countries around the world in over 30,000 sites. It has 355,000 employees. It's a $20 billion company. And what I discovered is through two whistleblowers, their names are Jay and John Carciero, I discovered that they were demanding kickbacks from their suppliers, that is, from Tyson's Chicken or Kellogg's Corn Flakes or Pepsi-Cola or whoever makes the actual items that they bring to the cafeterias that they supply or that they cook. And people were paying for the kickbacks. It works like this. This company gets a contract to run the cafeteria in your business or in your university, and it makes agreements with various suppliers, Pepsi, Tyson, so on, to supply the food. The contract with the university is generally cost plus. That is, this is what all the items cost. This is, and then plus means a percentage. The purchaser, that the university, for example, pays a percentage of the cost as a fee, and there may be some other fees as well. Well, if you are getting a kickback from, say, Pepsi-Cola or Tyson's Chicken of maybe 10%, and you are not telling the purchaser, that is the university, they are paying a percentage fee on top of the full price of the invoice without knowing that it's really 10% less. So Sodexo is cheating the university, and the university passes on the cost of this to the students and the faculty and everybody who eats there. These two brothers, Jay and John Carciero, were working for hospitals in Massachusetts, and they discovered this rebate system. And they discovered not only was it working for food, but that very often Sodexo had maintenance contracts with the hospital, so that if somebody wanted a job to fix the boiler or to fix the roof, that company had to go through Sodexo. Sodexo would demand a kickback, and these brothers protested, and they were fired. They have gone to numerous officials. They've gone to attorneys general in New York, in Connecticut, in Massachusetts, and as a result of their protests in New York State, and this has not been reported anyplace, the attorney general, Andrew Cuomo, has sent out subpoenas to half a dozen very large suppliers as well as to Sodexo. So we may be hearing more about that. As I said, it hasn't been reported any place except here for the first time. And it's important not only because people are paying more. A lot of the small companies cannot afford to pay these kickbacks. I spoke to the manager of the New England produce supplier, and he said he just can't do it. And also, if the price goes up for fresh produce, very often the school may decide, oh, we're just going to get something frozen, or we're going to get a substitute that's cheaper. So they don't get good food. It's interesting that when Michelle and Barack Obama went to a restaurant before they went to see Joe Turner's Come and Gone on Broadway in New York, they went to a restaurant that is known for the fact that the owner of the restaurant grows his own food locally. And Michelle Obama is very interested in promoting locally grown, the use of locally grown food. Well, here is a company which knocks out small local suppliers because they can't pay big kickbacks, and instead it goes to the very large corporations that have deals to pay kickbacks. The manager of that company said, the small produce company said, they squeeze hundreds of thousands of dollars away from us. But he said, they have the marketplace. We have no choice. In another case, an ice cream manufacturer said they cut so much into the profits, it wasn't worth the business. They try to intimidate you. They forced you to work on a low margin. And he said, we lost about $30,000 or $40,000 a year, and that's a lot for a small businessman. And in his case, they used to sell ice cream in the schools. He said the PTAs would run the selling of the ice cream, and they would use money to buy school equipment. He said when Sodexo got involved, there's no money for the PTA, there's no money for the kids. Sodexo took everything. This is an endemic problem, and there are some things that have started to be done about it. A couple of years ago, the USDA, which is the U.S. Department of Agriculture, they pay for the National School Lunch Program. They subsidize it. And they found out, they did some audits, they found out they were paying hundreds of thousands of dollars a year extra because companies like Sodexo were keeping these kickbacks. Sometimes they call them cashback discounts. They're really kickbacks. And in October of 2007, the Agriculture Department said that they had to now provide the schools with vendors showing any rebates. They had to provide the schools with invoices from vendors showing any rebates they received from these vendors, and that the federal reimbursements would not pay for rebates. That is, therefore, the schools were going to have to get bills minus the rebates because they wouldn't get the reimbursement otherwise. That's one thing that happened that's important. The Pentagon also did some audits, and a year ago, last May, when the Defense Department called for some bids, it said there was a major change and contractors would have to identify rebates that they were pocketing.
Lucy, I'd like to jump in right here. We are almost out of time on this side. What I'd like to do would be to note this. Let's bookmark this, so to speak, and continue with discussion of the Pentagon and Sodexo and what Pentagon discovered, because we're almost out of time on this side. Lucy, you have done a lot of work. Tell us about your website and how people can find out more about the things that you've been investigating over the years.
It's thecommissarscoop.com.
Commissarscoop.com. And you were working, are we going to be seeing an article about short selling and so forth? Some more
I am working on some other articles that relate to that, indeed.
So the CommissarScoop.com is where people should look in order to get more information about that.
Yes.
The real scoop of ice cream, so to speak.
Yes.
All righty. We're going to continue with this discussion on the other side of this program. However, this concludes side one of For the Record program number 675, Interview with Lucy Commissar. No such thing as a free lunch. This is being recorded on May 31st of the year 2009. My name's Dave Emery. For Lucy Commissar, thanks for listening.